This episode of Cider Chat is sponsored by the 3rd Annual New York International Cider Competition, where the judges are retail trade buyers who evaluate commercial ciders based upon category and price point. Submission forms for the February 9th, 2020 competition held in New York City can be found online at nyicidercompetition.com or go to the show notes for this year's episode 205.
Hi, this is James Mann.
And Colleen O'Sullivan.
Of Duck Chicken Cider, South London, England, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincaller and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we are in South London with the two folks behind Duck Chicken Cider. That's going to be a really interesting chat for any of you who are thinking about doing a little bit of urban cider making with a orchard-based component and to be doing it in a really small setting. So these two awesome people from South London who hosted me back in early September when I was overseas in that beautiful country, and all that great cider are our featured guest on this episode 205. But first, a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. There is a lot going on out and about in Ciderville. You would think, okay, this time of year kind of slows down. But truthfully, a lot of people are still at their last pressing, tweaking it out. And again, I'm talking about the Northern Hemisphere. I know that there are a lot of very good makers doing this same process down in the Southern Hemisphere when their winter rolls around. But right now, I don't feel sorry for you because you're in the middle of the summer. Hopefully, you're kicking your feet up right now and just enjoying cider. But for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, and certainly I'm just following on all the different social media feeds about cider, people are still bringing in different apples, or they have it in a cold storage and are pulling it out to do pressings. Or they're pulling them off the trees, where if you are in my spot of Ciderville, those apples are frozen. In fact, I just got an email from a friend of mine, Sharon Tracy, and she sent me a photo of a quince that is on one of my neighbor's trees. And I'm going to go check out that quince. They're still hanging there. And they look pretty good, so I'm kind of curious about it. So I'll update you if there's any interesting news about that. And for the most part, many of us are just, trying to just keep our cider going forward and keeping the airlock filled with water. If you're in a kind of a freezing place, sometimes that could happen. You might want to use something low-end vodka or something like that to fill your airlock. And the airlock is used to release the CO2 off of the cider. And to make sure that your cider, if it's in a carboy right now, that there's not a lot of airspace there because oxygen is not a friend to cider. It will kind of stale it out, to just put it quite frankly, and it doesn't do well. So you want to keep a very small amount of a headspace, especially if your fermentation has really slowed down and is just kind of at that rolling, just slow roll fermentation, low and slow. What we mean by that is low temperatures. I have a number of carboys in my basement right now. There's no heat on there or in that area. So it's about 50 degrees, which is kind of perfecto for me. You might be in a warmer spot, but I'm able then to really fill up my carboy, which is probably a half an inch from the cork and the airlock on top. And I like doing that because it just keeps that oxygen at the minimum. But I've had larger headspace, maybe no larger though than an inch and a half. And that, that's not a lot. It's not a lot. So you want to really lessen that. If you have a barrel, you want to be either stirring in the lees using the batonnage, especially if you're still early on your fermentation, or you might want to be checking the level there because you could get a headspace really quickly on when you're working with a barrel. So you want to top that off with some juice. If that's all you have, you could just go to a grocery store and get not the best juice, but it's better than nothing. It's better than adding water. And I would basically boil that juice up a little bit bring it up to temperature for, you know, a couple minutes or two. I'm not so exacto-macto with it. Just to kind of kill any kind of yeast in there further than they've already killed it when they pasteurize the hell out of it. But anyways, we'd use that to top off the barrel. But I actually have extra cider that I use to top it off. I always make an extra batch of cider on the side, like a 5-gallon batch, then I will use over the course of now between, late summer before I actually take all that cider out of the barrel. Although I am thinking about pulling my cider out of the barrel much sooner this year. So a lot's going on. That's just that piece there. And when I come back, I'm going to give you a little bit of updates from some folks out and about in Ciderville who have written to me recently and some cool news. So let's take a little pause here and I'll be right back. That was my cousin Jay and myself singing a little ditty from the We Like Cider song. Stay tuned. At the end of this here episode, you'll hear the new studio cut version of the full song We Like Cider. There'll be more on that coming up. But I first would like to next go to an email that came in from Jim. Jim, who is based in Chicago. And he wrote, just to let you know that I passed the BJCP Cider Entrance Exam, which is 100 questions in 30 minutes. 100 questions, 30 minutes. I mean, that is a lot. I don't know if I could read that fast. So now he is clear to take the cider tasting exam on January 11th, which is going to be in Indianapolis. Jim was going, and I'm sure he's still going, to the Northman Cider Bar, which is based in Chicago. Fantastic cider bar. Good friends that all work there and are just kicking it out. And he's also an active listener and patron of Cider Chat, which he credited both of those in helping him pass the exam. Now, this is a little different from the United States Association of Cider Makers, what they put out as an exam. But frankly, if you're into doing this, I think it's all worth doing all these because they all have different standards. It's only going to just up your game and give you another reason to drink a whole bunch of cider and Perry. So it looks like he just this past weekend in St. Louis was on a panel judging standard Perry and cider. So Jim, you're really super active. Very excited. And he also writes a blog, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes there. And the blog is all talking about the actual exam, some of the keynotes of what he had to study in order to complete that exam. So I think this would be a very good link to have for anyone out there now in these different evaluation and exam modes to get qualified as a cider judge. So look to that for episode 205. And I'm also going to post this link at the Cider Chat Facebook page because I think it's super informative and will help you. You know, I'm not a good like testing person. I always get like anxiety. So if you're like me, it would really help you kind of just go, okay, I could do this. So that email is in from Jim. When I come back, we have another email from another listener of Cider Chat coming right to you.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
This next email is coming in from our friend Matt, who's based in Oakland, who is super stoked for the CiderCon conference coming up. He's going to be a volunteer there. So I'm really excited to meet Matt. That's just like a dream come true, getting to meet listeners of Cider Chat. It just wows me. Anyways, Matt writes, oh my goodness, I just opened a bottle of cider from Eric Bordelais. Now that's what I call a perfectly balanced, sweet cider. I can almost taste the earth where the apples were grown, so different from the USA. And it's lightly, if not delicately, carbonated. It's a Brut Tender. And it was only $14 for a 750 mil. What? I would have gladly paid more for this. Leaves me wondering what he keeps for himself. He puts in like his little quotes. I would never known about Eric or how to even taste this epitome of deliciousness had it not been for you and Cider Chat. Aww. Thank you 1,000 times, Rhea, for all you are doing for this art, craft, and science of cider, the apple, and the pear. I truly feel so much gratitude for all the work you put into it. It has made a difference right in this very moment as I still taste a cider in my mouth. Lovely, so lovely. A tip of the glass, Matt. Oh, That is kind of awesome on a number of levels. One is, you know, pshaw, that's quite nice of you and giving such a nice tip of the glass to Cider Chat. And I agree, you know, had I not been on this journey either, I would have never met Eric Bordelais or done a tour to Normandy, France, and kind of continued that friendship and just expanded my horizons. And that is the beauty of Ciderville, is that there is more to discover, and it just consistently just like blows my brain in the best possible way. So that is a pretty kick-ass deal, no doubt, when you think how far it comes from, all the way from France. And those of you who don't know Eric Bordelais, he is based in Normandy, France. And on that same note, I am in cahoots with my friend Pamela in France, and we are setting up the next Normandy Cider Tour for next September. Going to Normandy, and we'll be dipping our toes down into Brittany, it looks like. So if you're interested in that, please do send me an email now. Just send it to Ria, that's spelled R-I-A, at ciderchat.com, so I can put you on the list. Again, I need a certain compliment for that tour, and also for the UK Cider Tour that I'm hoping to do in 2020 also. I have been hearing from some folks, so that's great, because that kind of like decompresses me, and then I'm able to spend all my time just creating the perfect complement of visits that we could do, and do that at the same time with sightseeing of the area that we're in that those two parts of the world. So that's what I have on the docket for 2020. There's just nothing like drinking cider with the maker on the land where it was, you know, birthed from, if you will. That is terroir. And terroir for me, really, it just, you could drink it, you could taste it out of the bottle, but to be there in the landscape, it really has informed me immensely about how terroir works, because you're smelling the ground, you know, just in like a dewy day outside, kind of rainy, you're smelling that, you're experiencing it. I could go on and on, but I will not for now. I just, suffice to say, thank you, Matt. And if you want to go to Normandy or England, if you're thinking like, oh, that'd be really, really cool to do next fall of 2020, send me an email today, ria@ciderchat.com.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh, yes, there is a reason, why we drink it like this. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Yes, we like cider and we like having fun, which I feel is a perfect entry point to our featured conversation with both Colleen O'Sullivan and James Mann of Duck Chicken Cider, based in South London. This married couple, they've been married for about 3 years now, have been making cider in their flat, essentially, like right down the hallway in the kitchen and right outside the kitchen window in a pretty tight quarter setting. So those of you thinking, oh, am I going to build like a little outbuilding? They don't even have that. They're doing it, and they're doing it pretty darn well, and are the first in South London to have done that, although it's kind of expanded a little bit more in the cider community since. But their story is super inspiring, and the way they kind of nonchalantly go about it, I think, is equally inspiring. So we're going to go there next and hear a little bit first about what they do when they're not making cider, and then get into the workings behind their cidery, Duck Chicken. So let's grab a glass and join this chat and head to South London with Colleen O'Sullivan and James Mann of Duck Chicken Cider.
I'm a tree officer full-time for one of the London boroughs, so my day job, I go out and look at trees to make sure they're happy and healthy, and if they need any work, I put work on them and make sure everything is in its place with trees. So yeah, it's a great job, and obviously there's some links to cider through my work. And that's great to have a kind of a crossover extracurricular activity to have. Yeah.
I work in knowledge for a large law firm. Has nothing to do with trees or cider, but it does seem to be a great place to find people who have orchards. So a lot of our, like the very origin of our cidery, of our cider making comes from a conversation with my boss at work when she asked, so you guys like cider? Yeah, we like drinking cider. She's like, you ever thought of making any? I was like, yeah, kind of, it'd be fun. She's like, oh, my mother-in-law has an orchard. Oh, cool. You guys should come down and see it. We're like, okay, let's come down and see it. And we're like, okay. We looked at, we did a bit of research on Google Earth, looked at the orchard from above. We're like, oh, that's quite a lot of trees. And it's in like a traditional desert apple growing area of Britain, Kent. So the Garden of England. And yeah, we went down to see the trees, 144 mature, not quite standards, mature trees.
Open-centered trees.
Open-centered trees. And yeah, so we're like, oh, yeah, we should probably make cider. So yeah, luckily going to work means that you can actually get a connection with some apples. And we've just got, I just spoke to another boss who was like, oh, my boyfriend has an orchard. It's a heritage orchard. He maintains, but isn't big enough to pick the apples. So that's another like chance for next year. We didn't get a chance to pick it this year. It was probably too late.
It's like a boss connection, isn't it?
Yeah. It's people who can maintain orchards, who have space, basically.
Should we give them a shout out, your bosses and the mother-in-law?
Yeah, sure. So my boss, Jenny McCarthy, and her mother-in-law is Lynn McCarthy of Pembury, Kent. And my other boss is Virginia Flower and her boyfriend, Simon Evans of Staplehurst in Kent. And he has, I think, about 300 old, like heritage open center trees too. We haven't been to see them yet, but we're looking forward to. Mm-hmm. There's some new varieties that we haven't tried. A lot of Bramley, which we do like. And then Lord Derby is another one. I've never heard of the apple, but I'd like to see it.
I think a lot of people are like doing a double take right now thinking, dang, man, you have some really cool bosses there, like hooking you up. Like, you know, that's a nice story. And I think it's a little bit part of your story in how you guys do a nice job of reaching out to people. And just to be transparent, I did get the privilege of being able to hang out with both Colleen and James in their South London apartment at Duck Chicken Central with Piccadilly the cat, and getting to know you and your style and who you are. You're just kind of like these up and coming upstart, like commercial makers who are really setting a stage there in London. You're like the only commercial makers doing something like that I know of at this point. Is that true?
It kind of was up until maybe last week when we went to an opening of another cidery based out of By the Horns Brewery, which isn't far away from us. What's it called?
Against the Grain Cidery.
John O is ex-brewer, and he's just getting started making his cider. But there are a few small producers in London. Obviously, there's Hawks, which is the biggest producer in London. And yeah, we've got Tom, who's also based nearby in Tooting. He does Wilding cider. And there's a couple of smaller makers in Southeast London doing just quite small festival.
With a commercial license.
Yeah, in Britain it's not that hard to have a commercial license or have to be registered as an exempt cider maker. So you don't have to pay any taxes below a certain production. So if you're a very small maker, you just have to contact HMRC and tell them you're going to make, HMRC is the tax authority in Britain, and tell them you're going to make cider and you're not going to make more than 7,000 litres.
Once the Queen, God bless the Queen, once she goes on to her heavenly queenly palace, does it become HKRC, His Majesty.
Luckily, okay, it's still H, so that works out really well for everything, doesn't it?
Yeah. Funnily enough, we were at a bar opening in South East London, and I was talking to a wine distributor, and he started to ask me if I wanted to get some apples from Prince Charles's orchards. Apparently, he had a connection for Prince Charles's orchards, and It's just kind of funny when you like you get that, like, oh yeah, he's got thousands of different apple varieties in his orchards, but they're not being used again.
What do you mean by that, again? Were they used at one time for cider?
It's just lots of people have orchards they don't use the apples from.
And maybe it's the same in the States. I don't know enough about cider production in America. I moved over to the UK before the cider boom really happened. So, yeah, maybe it's the same. There's a lot of unused orchards in America that people are able to get apples from, but it's certainly the case in Britain. There's, you know, maybe millions of acres of orchard that's just completely unviable commercially. But, you know, I think there's a real chance for young cider makers, small cider makers to get involved in these, in using those apples and utilizing it for the good.
Right. No doubt. Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. And that's a bit what you're doing. So in the meanwhile, Colleen's talking and I'm watching James open up a cider that I brought over to the UK. And, it's not, there's no sparkle to that, is it?
No, it's still.
It's still interesting.
Is it supposed to be?
Probably because I had it in that little bottle and I didn't, yeah. And that was just bottled in like 2 months ago. Super farmy.
Floral aroma.
It's a little bit spicy.
Yeah. And it kind of reminds me of an apple wine.
Mm-hmm.
Like a German, the wine from the Hessewiesen, the cider from Hessewiesen.
Pretty low ABV. Is it, do you have that kind of Brettanomyces going on there?
Not too much, Brett, no.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wish I know I had a label on it that I gave it to you. How is the acid? Is it pretty funked out that way?
No, it's pretty mellow.
I think you're right. It does remind me of apple wine as well.
Hmm. Okay.
We're big fans of apple wine, so it's fine.
Okay.
It's not a bad thing. That's a good thing for you.
I know, it's all good.
I'm sure we'll finish the bottle with no problem.
Yeah, no doubt. Good, good. All right, so getting back to your cider, the pensive podcast is like, oh my God, the commercial cider maker's drinking her cider. What are they going to think? So you are doing this through your front door, down a hallway, into the backyard of your, this is like a two-story home, kind of like in a row house situation in South London. And how's that going for you? And let's talk a little bit about that. Like, what made you think, oh, we could do this. We could set up a urban cidery in our backyard and put cases of apples in our hallway.
Yeah, I think it was a case of necessity that we would not be able to afford a commercial property to make cider in London. And luckily, you know, with James's kind of, with his law background, he could look into all the requirements of setting up a cidery and realizing it, you don't need a premise to do it. You could run it out of our, you know, run out of your house. So it was quite good. we were keen enough to give it a crack, see what happened.
We didn't really plan for it to go this way. It just kind of, like many things do, just escalated as we after the first year. We only made sort of 240 liters the first year.
That was 2016. So we've just done our fourth season of production. So yeah, the first year was literally just seeing if the cider, the apple varieties we were made available to us were viable to make a good cider. So
yeah,
it's just kind of gone from there. Luckily that first batch was pretty fantastic and we got great feedback from others that we shared it with, and thought, okay, this could work. What did we do the second year?
Because we bought equipment for the first year that was probably way too efficient for the amount we were making. So like a hydro press and a 2,000 kilos an hour scratter to then scrat 500 kilos of apples. So it would have been running for like half an hour. So then we had the ability to expand quite quickly without buying a new press or buying a new scratter. So the second year we bought 4 300-liter tanks. And then we filled, well, we picked all of the original orchard. And on the second day we were like, that's not going to fill the tanks. I was like, we've bought these tanks. We need to use them, be a waste to leave them empty for a whole year. So we went to the orchard next door because it's Kent and almost everywhere has the orchard that's next door, which is a commercial orchard.
Bentinck Farms.
Bentinck Farms. Bentinck?
Bentinck.
Yeah, it's Mark. And he has a few, like, it's about 20 acres, 25 acres of trees. But they're younger, so the oldest trees are about 14 years old. I think we picked them this year, those really old russets that were, like, they're single-leader trees. Nice orchard. We'd spoken to the lady, to Lynn, who we originally got our apples from, and she's like, oh, yeah, the guy next door, he has real, seems to have real trouble getting rid of his brambles. I think he was a bit like, what? Okay. Like, do you have any, like, seconds apples or something that, like, people don't, that you can't sell? He's like, yeah, well, I've picked these rows of trees, and there were so many apples.
Yeah, completely laden with apples. It was incredible, like, to think that's the, like, parameters of commercial sales for eating apples is this very specific size, and all the rest are waste. I mean, mm-hmm. It's got to be like 80% wastage on those trees. It's incredible.
Turns out there's a lot of like apples that weren't being used in that orchard. Now we've picked from there three times, and it's good.
Do you have to set up some type of leasing agreement with the growers? Is there a concern about that, especially now that there's more makers in London and the growing interest in cider making in general across the board? Is that a concern? Because I know that in the U.S. and in Canada, I've heard folks do set up like some kind of a agreement so that they could, you know that you could go back there each year.
Yeah, our original Lynn's orchard, you know, we have a very informal agreement. It's our orchard to pick. She's happy with us to basically save her time and money mm-hmm. picking the apples off the ground. With Mark's orchard, the amount we pick from his orchard is so small and probably inconsequential to him. We do pay him because he's a commercial orchard, and I think that's fair to pay him. We don't pay Lynn. But yeah, we pay him bottom basement prices basically mm-hmm. to haul away apples.
I think the second year we were picking, and we got to the last day of picking, and he was just like, so are you coming back next week? We're like, and the look on his face was just great sadness when we told him like, no, our tanks are full.
Oh.
He's hoping we'd clean up his whole orchard. I think that year he had a bumper crop and not much of a market for it.
Yeah. I think we could make 100,000 liters of cider out of his orchard alone if we wanted to go that way. I doubt that will ever happen, but
yeah,
I'm sure we could set something up. And if we were going to go to that level of production, we'd obviously sign up for a long-term lease on the apples.
Yeah. And we're now going to be allowed to prune the trees in the original orchard. So we're going to be able to actually give back to maintain these old, beautiful old trees. So we're learning how to prune trees, and we're going to go down in January to prune the old standard, like, Cox trees.
Well, let me ask the tree officer, Colleen, do you have experience pruning trees? Is that something that as a tree officer you would know or be able to take courses, or they train you?
I've done quite a lot of tree pruning courses over the years. I'm a certified arborist, so I know the basics, but fruit tree pruning is completely different from the field of floricultural like training. And really excited from my perspective to be able to go down there in January and do some pruning work. It's what I'm passionate about. Like, I like pruning trees. And I don't really get to do it in my day-to-day work. So, yeah, that'll be great. I'm sure it'll be freezing and raining, but I'll be happy as Larry in the fields with a saw.
Right on. Yeah, it's just expanding your world in so many different directions, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
So do the two of you, like, share the duties of cider making equally, like you are both in it, or do you say, okay, well, you know, James, you are bottling and Colleen is doing, I don't know, the measurement thing. How do you split that up as a couple? And on that same note, as a couple, you're newly married, somewhat, right? I mean, you guys.
Yeah, we were married. We got married in 2016, in October of 2016. So just a couple of weeks, we finished making our first cider together. So it's kind of crazy. It all headed off the same time. So
it's particularly crazy that Colleen ended up in hospital while we were picking apples for the first time.
Luckily, I recovered before the wedding, before everyone showed up.
Before the first time, do you want to talk about that? That sounds like that's a bit of an adventure there. Is it? It has a happy ending.
Yeah, I'm still alive, Rhea. So that's a fantastic
Hallelujah.
Ending to that story. No, I just ended up getting a kidney infection and not really realizing it until we were in the midst of picking the first round of apples. We'd been picking for maybe 45 minutes, and I'd been feeling, you know, not my best up until that point. But I just told James, I just looked at him. I said, I really don't feel well. And I think he saw the look on my face.
And it was like, you need to go to the hospital.
He's like, do you need to go to the hospital? I was like, yeah, I need to go to the hospital. So we literally, he packed me and our friend Laura, who was down helping us pick, into the truck.
It wasn't luckily, a truck back then. It was just a car.
Was it a car? Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was a car. It was a station wagon. So, yeah, packed us in, took me to A&E.
Luckily, it was 10 minutes away.
Yeah, luckily there's a hospital.
A beautiful hospital
really
10 minutes
close
away.
To the orchard. And James left myself and Laura in A&E. And James went back and picked the rest of the apples himself. Bless him.
Yeah.
I think
so
you
I
had
like,
a very long day.
We got to A&E and I was like, should I stay? And Colleen's like, no, you need to go pick the apples.
Yeah.
That's what we
go.
Came down here for.
Please go and pick.
And we didn't know that there was a track to the orchard then. So I had to wheelbarrow these bags of apples down about a quarter of a mile down through the Lynn's garden back to the vehicle, fill up the car and then go back to the hospital and see Colleen and Laura. I think we left the hospital about 11 p.m. Drove back.
You and Laura did.
Laura and I left the hospital.
I stayed in the hospital
for a
couple of days. Yeah. So it's a harrowing start to becoming a commercial cider maker.
And then I ended up having to, because Colleen was like not healthy enough to press. I just made all the cider myself.
Yeah.
The first year, 240 liters. So I was cleaning, like washing apples, squatting them, pressing, and just making an awful mess everywhere. There was water everywhere.
Well,
yeah.
Well, let's talk about like what you're managing here then. So, and how your cidery is set up. Let's give them the folks in Ciderville an image of that.
So we pick the apples in Kent, and we rent a pickup truck. So we don't actually own a car or a vehicle. So we rent a pickup truck and drive the apples back to London, and then hoping there's a parking space outside the house so we can unload. Otherwise we have to block the street and get honked at while we're unloading 25 to 30 bags of apples from a pickup truck. We pile them up in the hallway, which is it's quite narrow. It's only about
it's long and narrow
3 feet wide, but like 30 feet long, when we just make double stack bags of apples. And then because we'll normally do two picks. We'll do two picks in a row.
2 days of picking and then 2 days of processing.
And then
on the weekend, right? On the weekend.
Yeah.
That's
so
all that
we,
you're doing.
The last 2 years, we've taken off 5 days of holiday from our normal day jobs to get all the cider pressing done. So, yeah, we'll do kind of two we've done 2 4-day weekends and then a 3-day weekend, just to kind of tidy everything up at the end.
And then, yeah, so we have these bags of apples and we take them outside and wash them. And Colleen just got a new big tub this year, which
I'm pretty excited about. We got the fish pond, and that's my new washing area. Yeah, so as far as divvying up roles in the cider making, I'm lead washer, and I, aka the only washer. So I make sure all the apples are ready. James is lead scratter. He's doing all the stuff inside with the loud scratting machine, and then he also does the pressing bit. And then it depends on the apple variety. If I can help out unloading the hydro press and taking all the pulp away, I do. But the washing is just takes up so much time.
It's not the most efficient process, but it's quite important to us, like having a quality of apple. So like the cleanliness and like the state of the apple is very, I think does have a role in how clean the cider tastes.
Mm-hmm. So you're cleaning the apples, you're doing this outside in your backyard, and this is kind of like a postage stamp size backyard.
Yeah.
And let's talk about where you have the tanks set up.
So in Britain, we have a lot of these terraced houses, which are, they're joined at the front, and the first two rooms are joined, but then then as you get further back into the house, there's a split. So there's a gap between the houses. It's called a light well, which was just to get light into the middle of the properties back before we had like artificial lighting. So we built a 2-story wooden structure, which has 4 300 liter tanks on the bottom, and then above that 60 and 30 liter tanks, which is where we keep the tanks there. And that it's the most efficient use of space we could have. And it kind of gets to, because we only own the bottom part of the property, we kind of get to the limit of where the height of what we own is the top of our tank shed.
So just for Ciderville to know, they walk outside their back kitchen door, and from the bedroom I was staying in, from the bathroom, perhaps from your bedroom, you could look out and see the tanks right outside the window. So these tanks are held outside year-round, rain or snow, London fog, and yet the temperature in that, and I didn't know this was called a light well, but that's a cool thing, stays pretty consistent for you. Is that true? Do you ever kind of like in the middle of a massive heat wave in London go, oh man, should we get some ice packs on those?
It kind of does start to act a bit funny. This year when it was quite hot in the summer, it was sort of 38
degrees centigrade, so what, 85, nearly 90 Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. I think we lost a lot of suspended CO2 during those times, and it gave a kind of funk, not a bad funk, to the end of our cider. But I think our cider benefits from being in that space. It's kind of ideal. It was a space we were not utilizing at all, just generally, and the way the structure is set up, and you've got brick all the way around it, and it's out of the way of any sunlight. It's kind of quite steady temperatures,
yeah,
you know. Even in the winter, you're going to get some heat emanating from.
But I think that's like a natural part of like cider making is just it is a product that has to be stable across temperatures. So actually, this year we're getting very, very slow fermentations because it's not America cold in Britain, but it's been consistently colder this year since we pressed than it was last year.
Hmm.
So we're a month or two behind what we were last year at this point. So we have slower fermentation. That all means we have happier yeasts. So we haven't had any sulfury smells this year. Hmm. Whereas last year we did have quite a few with that obviously I think there was a heat wave in late October, November last year. So we had very fast fermentations, but then yeast dying. Mm-hmm.
Are you pitching yeast or using the indigenous yeast?
We pitched in yeast into everything the second year. Third year, almost entirely cultured yeast with a couple of natural, small tanks of natural fermentations.
Okay.
And then this year we've actually ended up with about nearly 50-50. Because we just didn't pitch in one of the last tank we pressed, the big one. We're just like, yeah, it's just
let's hope for the best. Hopefully it works out.
Does Duck Chicken Cider have a particular niche market besides being you might have different feelings about it, but you are kind of like a boutique urban cidery. I mean, you're like nano in comparison to like a nano brewery, super small in that way. So you could be super stealth, but for your cider that you're making, are you looking towards like, I really want to make this type of cider, or does it matter? You're just however the wind blows that year, you're going to go with it.
I think we're still exploring, and a lot of that has to do with what's available every year in the orchards. So this year we had quite a small pick, and there just weren't as many apples available, and that's fine. So we only made about 1,600 liters. Last year we did maybe 2,200 liters, mm-hmm. and that's the nature of making cider, or at least we think it is. It's going to be peaks and troughs. So because of that, we have decided to do more experimental pet nat, go more for bottling this year than we probably would have otherwise. I don't know. Maybe next year we'll think, actually, bottling wasn't that great. Let's go more back to bag and box. We're still so young as a cidery. We're not sure. We have gone for what we'd consider more of a specialty cider into 750s, and then kind of just our normal still cider into 500 mils. So we're selling it at a like lower price. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's more approachable for some people. But if you want something a little bit more special from Duck Chicken, you can get a 750 share bottle.
Size must be an issue for you in terms of the space for holding all the glass bottles. And
yeah, we just ordered 252 750ml bottles. So we now have three towers of bottles in the hallway. instead of apples,
we've got bottles now.
It's just bottles and bicycles now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a piece there that you do so well maneuvering around in your home. But it's tight quarters. So you were... When I was there in late summer, you were doing the bag in the box. So you're you're still doing that. That's pretty
popular. Yeah, I think because that's how cider is really sold in Britain, like real cider is sold in Britain, that's always going to be our main market. And we have a couple of places, the Harp in Covent Garden and Spartan Brewery, who they take about half of our production every year.
Well, let's talk about where they are. So you just mentioned two places that where folks could find your cider if they're coming into London.
The Harp in Covent Garden, which is just sort of between Leicester.
Leicester Square and Trafalgar Square, isn't it?
Leicester Square and Trafalgar Square.
Was that the bar that we went to?
The one we went to, yeah.
That's great.
That's probably the peak achievement of our cider making is to be sold at the Harp.
You walk in, you are completely intimidated because it's always full. And you look at the bar, like, how am I ever going to get served here? And you walk up and you're served within the minute. It's unbelievable. The smallest bar, and there's four people working behind it, just working through customers.
Yeah, it's kind of the pub that's like the equivalent of our cider setup. It's just like you have to shuffle around people instead of boxes. But that's like a good thing in a pub.
Yeah,
it also has like the back entrance too, and I notice a lot of people are hanging out in the back alley with pint glass in hand. And the cool thing about the Harp, it's right off of like a main tourist area, and there is tourists are welcome, and you don't know who you're kind of rubbing shoulders with, and everybody's really chill. And there's also an upstairs place to sit too. which is
yeah. And Carl, last time I delivered, I told Carl that our fermentations were going quite slowly, and Carl's one of the managers, and he was like, "Well, we need to have a party at your house where we all hug the tank to heat it up so that fermentation goes faster." So we can keep supplying them.
Awesome. So we have the harp, which is right in Trafalgar Square, right there in the heartbeat of so much for people coming into London. It's where people go to just take it all in. Another location that they could find Duck Chicken?
We've been supplying Spartan Brewery, which is on the Bermondsey Pier Mile. We've been supplying them since April. And they're wonderful people. They're kind of a little bit like us. They have full-time jobs, but they are also running a brewery in their off time. And so they're only open on Saturdays for sales. But they do some really nice traditional English ales, milds, bitters, mm-hmm. pale ales. They're worth going and checking out if you're in town. We also distribute to a couple of bottle shops in London, Caps and Taps, which is located in Kentish Town in North London. Phil and Steph, they're a fantastic couple, and it's quite annoying in some ways because every time we deliver there, we get sucked into sitting in the bottle shop just buying a bunch of beer and cider and having a chat with them. So we end up probably not making any money whatsoever because we end up just sitting in there for a couple of hours having a chat, but they're fantastic.
And ironically, we actually met them outside the hop.
Last night.
And discussed whether we had any cider available to sell to them. We're like,
Yeah, we also distribute to the Sawhouse Bottles in Brockley, which is in southeast London. And Richard there has a really tiny bottle shop really close to Brockley Station. That's not spelled like the vegetable broccoli.
It's like the name Brock with an L-E-Y at the end.
Yeah, I figured, yeah.
So, he's got a fantastic range of beer, cider, and wine. I mean, I think if we had a bottle shop, Richard's collection of drinks would probably be in line with what we would want. Mm. But he's got a fantastic taste for
things. He's just opened a new bar. Also in Brockley, called Joyce, and they have Oliver's Colonel cider apple saison, which is using Oliver's cider apples, and then a number of natural wines and other really good beers.
Is that spelled Joyce? J-O-Y-C-E.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've done a delivery to Station House, which is in Durham, in northeast England, with Suzanne and Chris, who we met at Rossfest.
The landlady and landlord?
Yeah, yeah.
Love those people.
They're really good people. Yeah. And hopefully we can arrange another delivery to them. For us, the distribution of our cider is very difficult because we don't have a car.
We like to deliver by bicycle.
So it just depends on our travel schedule.
So let's just talk about two of your ciders, two that folks mm-hmm. might find at the Harp, or two that you're hoping will be fermented out and ready for 2020. What can folks be looking for in Ciderville for that?
So this year we've actually mostly made Giggle Juice, which is a blend of about 50-50 blend of Egmont Russet and Bramley apples, which it's a little bit acidic. It's an Eastern Counties style cider. So the Eastern Counties of Britain, the cider is more acidic and less tannin driven because you use dessert apples, so eating apples rather than West Country cider apples. Let's put it that way.
And the Giggle Juice is the ABV on that?
It's about 7%.
Yeah, obviously it's going to fluctuate every year. Mm-hmm. Our other cider is going to be Easter Hill, which is just a single variety Cox Orange Pippin, which is by far our favorite drink. I mean, maybe there's some sentimental history to that, but it's acidic, but fruity. It seems to always have sparkle no matter what time of year we seem to bottle it up. It's very wine-like. It's my favorite. So yeah. Those ones are going to be available. We've got a couple of blends for 2020 that we haven't, we're not even sure what they're going to taste like because we've used an apple that we're quite not sure what it is for a couple of tanks. So we'll see how that is.
It might be a Jonah Gold.
It may be Jonah Gold.
But then Jonah Gold should be very sugary, and it wasn't sugary enough for Jonah Gold. So.
But it'll be another eating apple, and mm-hmm. it'll, I'm sure, blend in well with our kind of our spread of ciders we've created over the last couple of years.
So you are really kind of representing Eastern part of England and showcasing the culinary apples in that region, which is pretty cool. I mean, Bramley is an apple that's used in both West Country and East Country.
Yeah, I was surprised to find out not too long ago that actually quite a few, like three counties cider makers do use Bramleys to bring a bit of acid into their ciders.
Yeah, no doubt. So you're kind of creating a whole new understanding for the East Country in that way. I mean, I learned by
going say we're creating something new. I think we're just going back to the actual roots of Kentish cider making, which is making these strong acidic ciders that have to be fermented dry because before like refrigeration or pasteurization, you couldn't stop fermentation. So mm-hmm. I think we're just trying to be kind of just keep it very simple. Like,
yeah, we're trying to be true to the style. Without having said it already, we obviously don't add sugar. We don't back sweeten any of our ciders. They're all fully fermented. Even the Pet Nat is, by the time you're drinking it, it's going to be fully fermented. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're interested in having when we go out to drink. You know, last night we were drinking some Oliver's Dry, and it was fantastic to have some Oliver's Dry available. You know, that's what kind of got us into cider making is we didn't see something on the market that we wanted to drink all the time. A lot of ciders are so sugary, and we've tried to cut out sugar as much as we could from our diet. And, you know, something about a fully fermented juice is just so much more beautiful than anything that has been back sweetened or had an artificial sweetener added to it. You really get to experience the apple for what it's worth.
Super stoked that you're doing this in your urban stealth cidery, and you have a super cool logo with the three-legged duck on the front. It's duck chicken. James and Colleen doing this like crazy ass cider making setup. It's really a model for anyone who, you know, is thinking about like dipping their toes in to just like do it and go forward to it. And what you've created in this like short amount of time is helping save orchards and educate people and then producing some good kick-ass cider. I mean, you know, rock on, South London Duck Chicken.
I'm just so happy we're able to make a decent cider that people enjoy drinking. And if we can inspire some people to get involved in cider making that were previously hesitant because of their setup, like, just go for it and, you know, make it happen. You can make it happen. I know it's annoying to have bottles and apples in your hallway for a little bit, but if you are really passionate, you'll just make it happen. And all of that won't matter when you see the joy on people's faces when they have a little bit of your cider down at one of your favorite pubs in the world. It's unbelievable to have that. We'll be right back.
If you're making plans to go to London and you want to like get a list of all those locations that they mentioned for getting cider, well, you could find them all listed in the show notes for this here episode 205. Or you could go backwards to marker 43 minutes in on this podcast, and you'll get it all there. So a big tip of the glass to both Colleen O'Sullivan and James Mann of Duck Chicken Cider for just making it happen in their own home commercial cider making project in South London. So inspiring. While I was producing this episode and thinking about like UK cider makers and whatnot, you know, folks who might be thinking about exporting their cider to the US, I had a little, you know, kind of brain wave kind of go through saying, you know, dang, the New York International Cider Competition could be a really good place to send your ciders to get some feedback before you take that next step. Remember that the judges are retail trade buyers. So these are people who are stocking the bars, stocking the shelves in the different stores, and they're going to give you a very different view on your cider because it's based on category and price point than a classic cider judge like Jim, who just got the BJCP next step to become a certified cider judge. And that's not to take away from the different kind of cider judge qualifications, but a tradesperson who's going to be buying your cider to sell is going to have a different view, which is another penny of that competition. So again, you could submit your cider, find the info at nyicidercompetition.com. It's a little hard to believe, but next week is Christmas. The following week on the Cider Podcast release day is New Year's. And somewhere in between, there'll be more Cider Chat episodes rolling out. Stay tuned. I'm not sure if it'll go live on Christmas or not. I just don't know. I just don't know. But it's all good. There's lots of good chats coming in the queue. And speaking of which, this time of year, I mean, we are getting super close to CiderCon. So if you have not signed up for that yet or gotten your hotel reservations, do I need to remind you again just how intense the traffic would be? So here you are spending all that time, all that money to get to CiderCon, and you might be stuck in traffic if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to do an Airbnb and hang out with my friends, which is cool. You could do that all the time. I imagine with your friends, it's no loss in Ciderville for parties, but you want to get down and go to some of the amazing workshops that are going to be happening at CiderCon. What an opportunity. In fact, I'm going to be moderating a first ever terroir spotlight focusing on my spot of Ciderville, Western Massachusetts, which I call the Plymouth Rock of Cider for the United States, because that is where in 1984, West County Cider kicked off as the first commercial cider maker in the country at that time. And so we are going to have a West County Cider. We'll also have Artifact Cider, Headwater Cider, and Bear Swamp Cider, four different makers bringing their wares, and we'll be chit-chatting about terroir and what the heck that means and how we taste it in cider. Probably a couple differing opinions and views, and of course, my view too, which is always off the map. Oh, it'll be really good. So I hope you could sign up for that and I get to see you in Oakland, if not sooner. In the meanwhile, keep on loving it out there. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards. And having fun, there is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
We like cider. We like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason.
We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes we do.
We like pot.
Oh yes we do.
We love the orchards. Having some fun, there is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. There's a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum. We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider. We like pot.
Oh yes we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!